Our meeting will come to order, please. Quorum is present. Representative Pearson, would you review the minutes, please, and move for approval?
I move approval of the minutes.
Representative Pearson moves approval of the minutes of February 24th. Is there any discussion, corrections, or additions? Hearing none and seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, no. The motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. Members, today we have a very busy schedule, so we want to move through this effectively, efficiently. We have students in the audience, and we're so happy to have them. Welcome to our committee. And we're going to lead off with a couple of CRESIA bills, and then, or maybe we'll insert Representative Benardi in between. Where are you, Representative Benardi? Are you on a tight schedule? You're flexible.
Right.
Thank you. Well, if we get bored with Representative Cresha, we'll insert you. So
move,
Representative Cresha, welcome to the testifying table, and please move House File 859.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And what was going to be a non-hostile bill has suddenly taken a different tenor, I see.
Representative Cresha moves House File 859 to be re-referred to the Committee on Education Finance. Please introduce your bill, Representative Cresha.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. And I really appreciate those of you who made the effort to get here for these two bills because they're super important, and I now know where everybody's priorities lie. I do have some testifiers. I'll just speak briefly to the bill. So 859, members, relates to economic education. And I have a couple of different reasons for supporting this besides the fact that it's a really good idea. As you may know, in Little Falls, we have had an economic team that has gone to nationals a couple of times. We have a fantastic teacher there who could not be present for this, but he has just done an absolute amazing job with this. And the success that he has brought to those students and the school has been absolutely fantastic. And I want to expand that. I want to give other schools that opportunity. So no one questions the need for Minnesota students to understand economics and personal finance. In fact, this body has adopted state academic standards for economics and personal finance back in 2011, I believe. Those new standards include benchmarks at each grade level and a semester course in high school. They're also considered to be among the best economic standards in the nation. In our state, standards in personal finance fall within those economic standards. Economics and personal finance are typically taught at the high school level by secondary social studies teachers. While Minnesota produces an abundance of teachers prepared in history, political science, geography, and other social sciences, only 2% of secondary social studies teachers are focused on economics in their undergraduate preparation. Yet high school social studies teachers can be and are called upon to teach economics at any time. Our elementary teachers, who must now help their students meet economic and personal finance standards, typically have very little training. Many of them have never taken even one college course in economics. House File 859 would provide an appropriation of $500,000 over the biennium to build the capacity of the Minnesota Council on Economic Education to bring essential professional development to teachers throughout the state, especially in greater Minnesota. The appropriation would be a one-time investment in online courses designed specifically for Minnesota teachers, aligned with our standards and including instruction and effectively transferring these concepts to students. It would also fund the establishment of a master's teacher corps to build the capacity of MCEE to provide face-to-face workshops in greater Minnesota and to bring the knowledge and experience of Minnesota's most accomplished economic teachers. And I'm going to leave from my notes for just a second, because really what allured me the most about this was the fact that we can build up a program that will reach folks using online tools and really hone the skills of the teachers that are trying to deliver this curriculum. As a teacher myself out in greater Minnesota and rural areas, there's so many times that you want to bring these concepts to the classroom, that you want to do the best you can, and you're just screaming for a resource to help you sharpen your skills to get in the classroom. I think this is one of those, and I'll turn it over to my testifiers, because they know far more than I do.
Yeah, thank you very much, Representative Krisha. What you've stated is really something we need to think about, is this area of economics and the amount of training that our teachers need. Welcome to our committee, Ms. Rush, and please say your name and begin.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Martha Rush, and I teach at Mountainview High School in Arden Hills, Minnesota. I started teaching economics in 2004, and I hadn't had a class in it since 1987. Like many in my situation, I was desperate for quality professional development. In 2006, after 2 years of developing the curriculum mostly on my own as the only econ teacher in my building, I came across a postcard advertising a one-week course preparing to teach high school economics. This course was a complete lifesaver. Not only did Professors Kurt Anderson and Agapitos Papagapitos give us a solid background in econ, but they taught us how to teach it. The MCEE promotes active learning strategies that have transformed econ into the most fun hour of the day, with activities like Econoland, where students act out the circular flow diagram, interacting first in a resource market and then in a product market, and then the market in wheat, where students act as buyers and sellers and see how equilibrium prices arise. My students have reaped the benefits, and I have many former students who are now getting PhDs in econ in places like Princeton, Columbia, and Berkeley. I have many who are attending or have graduated from the Carlson School of Business as well. My student teams have competed at the National Econ Challenge Finals alongside the wonderful Little Falls teams. Different divisions, thankfully. and we've held our own against schools like Phillips Academy and Choate. My own son, who is a product of my classes, is an econ and math major at Dartmouth. Not only is MCEE's professional development in economics key, but they also offer professional resources to help us teach personal finance. Thanks to the MCEE, students are learning the importance of saving and budgeting, the power of compound interest, and the importance of building their own human capital. The MCEE offers the best staff development, bar none, and I am proud now to be able to give back as a presenter. Just last week in St. Cloud, I presented a lesson that I co-wrote called Earning Credit that encourages math teachers to teach about credit scores and compound when they're teaching compound interest. On Saturday, I led a workshop for teachers in the Duluth area, helping them see how to implement new interactive activities in their classrooms. Every year, more social studies and business teachers are assigned to teach econ for the very first time, and many are fearful because they don't feel prepared. Thankfully, the MCEE continues to be there for them. Before I leave, I'd like to share just a few comments that I received unsolicited from teachers who've been in our programs this summer and fall. From one Minneapolis teacher, "I am so impressed with what you guys do. I love the high school economics book you gave out at the training you did, and I used it almost every day for the rest of the semester." From a teacher at UBA Medical Academy, "Thank you for a great learning experience this summer. I have worked hard out on an island by myself for 3 years to make my econ curriculum, but within a matter of months in this class, I was able to better fill missing pieces in my curriculum and gain new ideas on how to teach concepts in engaging ways." And from a young teacher in Delano, "I thought the summer workshop was incredibly useful and fun. I'm now actually excited to teach econ, not just begrudgingly grateful for any social studies job in Minnesota." Thank you.
Very interesting, and I can't even imagine how many students you have motivated, because this is really a new, exciting area. And in our standards, it begins in kindergarten. And I know of third graders who are now investing because they're so excited about this. Welcome to our committee, sir, and please say your name for the record and begin.
Yes, my name is Tim Bodine. I'm a board member on the MCEE. I work at Cargill as an economist. I've been there for 36 years, mainly doing forecasting to help Cargill locate better international investments. So I'm really proud to be here to represent MCEE and my own personal views as well. So MCEE's mission is to improve economic and financial literacy for Minnesota students. I believe that an understanding of economics and personal finance is essential for Minnesota students to be properly ready for college and for life that follows as parents, voters, workers, consumers, and leaders. At MCEE, we reinforce this understanding by offering professional development in economics the Minnesota K-12 social study teachers who in turn use that knowledge in their teaching. As my other comrades have said here, unfortunately, we don't have enough teachers that are fully trained in this area across the state. So as Martha has testified, we've built great content at MCE. That investment has been paid for and delivered continuously from continuous support from organizations like Cargill, 3M, General Mills, and the Minneapolis Fed. We also have a good deal of support from individuals, including me personally, and many other local firms. Finally, we leverage excellent resources from the University of Minnesota and other state higher education institutions. We're unique in content and delivery. No other organization fills this need in Minnesota like we do. We are confident we can sustain MCE with existing support. We are asking here today for one-time support to build more capacity to leverage and amplify the distribution of our product. We want to upgrade our online training capacity, and we want to grow our team of master teachers who in turn will bring our content to even more teachers. I mentioned at the outset that my career has centered on finding good investments for Cargill. As a citizen and a professional, it is my view that this one-time support would be an excellent investment for the state of Minnesota. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bowden. And we have some questions, I believe. Before we go to that, is Susan Freivolds here yet? Susan, would you also like to come forward and testify? Susan is from St. Cloud State University. Yeah, Simon, if you could just move another chair in, that would be great.
I'm sorry, I thought he was excusing me.
Welcome to our committee. Please say your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you. I'm Susan Freivolts from the Minnesota Council on Economic Education. I don't have prepared testimony this morning, but I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you very much for being here and for coming. Now we have member questions. Representative Moran.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for being here this morning. Thank you for bringing this bill to the committee. But just for clarity, can you just tell me a little bit more about what the appropriation would do? You know, how much does it cost for the program to be implemented, and will the dollars be used for staff or educators or anyone?
Representative Krisha.
And thank you, Madam Chair. If you have an answer, go ahead. I can supplement.
Okay.
Ms. Freivolts.
We'll use those dollars to develop and pilot and just build out the two specific online courses that are designed for Minnesota teachers. And that includes, you know, some staff time at the council, but we'll distribute a lot of that funding to teachers that we'll ask to help us evaluate and revise the online course, and also to test their students, so that we make sure that what we're teaching the teachers is actually transferred to the students. So we've built in a couple of rounds of testing of students and revising the online course, so that at the end of this process, we've got a product that we're very confident is serving the purpose for which it was developed. And then we'll also work with our master teacher core to give them some opportunities to teach, evaluate how they're doing, train them, and so at the end, once again, we've got the product that we're looking for.
Representative Moran?
Madam Chair, is there a cost for teachers to participate in the program?
Pardon me?
Is there a cost for the teachers?
We will.
Ms. Freivolts.
Pardon me?
No, I'm just calling on you.
Oh, okay.
I'm recognizing you to answer the question.
We'll distribute information about this opportunity to teachers throughout the state through communicating with the principals and the district offices.
Madam Chair.
Representative Moran.
But is there a cost for the educators? Yes, there are costs.
Ms. Freivolts.
Cost for educators. No, I'm sorry. I didn't understand that. No, there's no cost for the educators. In fact, as part of developing out these courses, we'll actually be giving them a stipend to participate and to help us in as we develop the course and the teacher corps.
Thank you.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to say, I've benefited from MCE opportunities in the past that allowed me to incorporate economics concepts into my geography curriculum, because like in real life, economics is not an isolated strand. It shows up, seems to show up everywhere. But I also wanted to say Ms. Rush is not only a leader by being here today, but was recognized as a TIES exceptional teacher this year, and is, I know from my experience, a leader at Moundsview High School, but obviously more broadly as well, and has been recognized as that.
Thank you, Representative Dabney, for giving that extra salute to Ms. Rush, because I know she is phenomenal. Is there anyone else in the audience who may want to testify for or with concerns to this House file? If not, Representative Kreisha, closing comments, and I am going to call on Representative Bernardi next, so I'll give you a little rest.
I didn't woo you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say this is a great opportunity, and certainly we'll do the net present value and the IIRR calculations in the next committee. But for the purpose of this committee, thank you for considering this. As you've heard, and when you sit up here next to someone like a teacher like Ms. Rush, you just feel really, really good about doing things like this, because you can feel the passion sitting here, and you can hear it in the voice, and I know what something like this would translate to the classroom. So, members, I hope you would approve this and move me on to the next committee.
And thank you, Representative Kreisha, for bringing a great teacher to our presence. We have so many of them, and they don't often get to tell us about what great things they do for our students. So with that, the chair renews Representative Kreisha's motion that House File 859 be re-referred to the Committee on Education Finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. The motion prevails, and the House File is on its way to Education Finance. Representative Bernardi. Thank you very much, everyone who testified for this bill. It's very kind of you to come so early in the morning. Pages, will you make sure there are enough chairs there for everyone? Representative Bernardi, welcome to our committee. Representative Seltzer, would you move 724?
Madam Chair, I move 724.
Representative Seltzer moves House File 724 to be re-referred to the Committee on Education Finance. Thank you, Representative Seltzer. And Representative Bernardi, welcome to our committee. Oh, you have an amendment. Ooh, sorry. Representative Seltzer, would you be willing to move the A1 amendment to?
Madam Chair, I move the A1 amendment.
Representative Seltzer, on behalf of Representative Bernardi, moves the H-02-724 A1 amendment. Is there any discussion? Do you think you have to explain this, perhaps, Representative Bernardi, before we vote on it?
Sure. This the amendment that we added is for resources to be able to provide teacher training and developmental activities for our teachers to be prepared to teach a concurrent enrollment.
Is there any discussion? So what you have done on page 2 is add after line 14 and after line 16, or before, actually, the dollar amount. Right. So any discussion? Hearing none. Oh, question. Representative Wills, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Bernardi, I'm just curious what the National Alliance of Concurrent Enrollment Partnerships is, if you could explain that organization and how it fits in.
Representative Bernardi.
I will defer that to one of our testifiers today, Superintendent Hoverman.
Sir, will you introduce yourself for the record and then answer Ms. Representative Will's question?
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Dan Hoverman, Superintendent of Moundsview Public Schools, and you're referring to NASEP. NASEP is a national agency which accredits our colleges to offer or to be a part of dual and concurrent enrollment programming. And they have the guidelines and that colleges must adhere to in order to offer dual and concurrent enrollment.
Representative Wills? Okay, thanks for the clarification. Any other discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Please explain your bill, Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, and for moving my bill, Representative Seltzer. I appreciate that. I'm very pleased to be here today with our school district. They've come to you before when they've shared the innovative and progressive things that they're doing in their school in preparing students to be able to get post-secondary education opportunities. And with me today is our superintendent, Dan Hooverman, and a student from our school, Marco Ochoa, and also a teacher leader in Rob Reitz. And I'm going to let them talk about it the most, but I think this is one that we can all come together on because it really creates opportunities for our students to be successful, not only in high school, but to be able to actually earn honors and scholarships and move into post-secondary education and be very successful. I serve on the Higher Education Committee now, and the students that have these opportunities in high school are showing much more success in graduating on time. And the best part is they get in their workforce and they help our communities. And I do get emotional over the issue of education, which I bet some of you others on this committee do as well. So when you hear Marco's story I'm going to let him share it with you, but I'm going to tell you two things. He's a senior, and he is he's an intern at Medtronic already, and he got a full-ride scholarship for 4 years at Bethel College. So he and his parents and family and the school district have a lot to be proud of, so congratulations.
So. Thank you, Representative Bernardi. Are we going to do a PowerPoint?
Yes. First, we're going to get introduced.
Okay.
Dr. Hooverman is going to introduce us, and then we're going to move over to their PowerPoint.
Dr. Hooverman.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. As Connie has mentioned, I'm joined today by Marco Ochoa, senior at Irondale High School. And Marco's going to share some of his experiences being part of the dual enrollment, concurrent enrollment program that we have at Irondale. It's important to keep in mind, Marco, as part of the class of 2015, they're the first class, graduating class at Irondale, that has had for their entire career the opportunity to participate in what we've been doing around dual and concurrent enrollment. And again, he's got a terrific story, so I'll be quick so we can get to Marco. And then Rob Reitz has been a teacher and a teacher leader at Irondale for a number of years. And Rob is going to be able to give you, from a teacher perspective, the impact of concurrent and dual enrollment on a broad range of students. So quickly on the PowerPoint, I'm only going to probably bring about 4 or 5 slides to your attention. Rob, I'm wondering if you could move us to this slide. Yes, thank you. What you see here is a comparison at Irondale High School. If you look at the graduating class of 2012, in the graduating class of 2012, the kids there earned approximately 3,000 college credits during their career. What that really represented were opportunities that were available to students who were, say, in the top quartile, top 20 or 25 or 30% of the class. That had been the way in which most, you know, concurrent enrollment opportunities had been laid out. And that's true for Moundsview. I think it's true for a number of other districts. Well, if you look at the slide and look at what happened to the class of 2015, you'll see that we're projecting, you know, that over 2,000 additional college credits are going to be earned by the students in that class. A majority of that, not all of it, but a majority of that increase are for kids in the middle. Kids who are between the 35th, 70th percentile. Because when we expanded our dual and concurrent enrollment opportunities, we expanded it so that those opportunities would be there for a broader expanse of our kids. In doing that, we also had seen a pattern for years where many of our kids, and this is very unfortunate, many of them were kids of color, and many of them were kids who were socially, economically disadvantaged, were not able to access these courses. So now we'll fast forward to a couple of additional slides. On this one, you'll see the representation of the non-white and white students at Irondale, 2012-2015. The next slide will show you, on the left, you'll see that in 2012, 21% of the kids earning college credit were non-white. You can see what happened in 2015. So when you think of it from an equity perspective, when you think of it from a workforce development perspective, when you think about it from the perspective, as Connie had mentioned earlier, that kids who take a college, rigorous college-level course in high school, it exponentially increases the likelihood that they're going to be successful in taking similar courses in high school, but more so on into college. You can see how we've made that shift. Next slide, you'll see, if you want to look at eligibility for free and reduced lunch, you can see the percentages of kids at Irondale, what that looks like. Now on the next slide, you'll see the impact that we've had in terms of making opportunities for kids to take rigorous college-level courses available. Now, it's one thing to take a course. This doesn't say they just took it. This says they were successful when they took the course and they performed at a high enough level in order to earn the college credit. And it doesn't mean they're earning one college credit. It ranges from earning 3 to 6 to 30 to 40 to beyond that. So I just wanted to draw that to your attention. It's in the accompanying materials, but we're very, very proud of that because we feel that it's created wonderful opportunities. We've created a much different expectation on the part of kids of what they're able to do, how they're able to perform. With that, I'll turn it over to Rob.
Very good, Dr. Hoberman. Very, very interesting. So, Mr. Reitz, welcome. Please say your name for the record and begin.
I'm Rob Reitz. I've been at Irondale High School in the Mounds View Public School District for 9 years, and I've moved on from being a teacher of special education students to a leader of instructional strategies at Irondale High School and now for the district. And what I really want to speak to is the significant change in how teachers approached the instruction of students in college concurrent and advanced placement courses. Because it is significantly different to say to teachers that we want to create greater access for more students in courses where you have traditionally taught only the top 20%. And the way in which teachers approach instruction needed to change because they needed to be more responsive to all different types of learners. And they also needed to be able to provide opportunities for students to experience success in content that was well above courses they had previously taken. A lot of the way in which they were able to meet student needs in courses like Advanced Placement U.S. History or our Anoka Ramsey College Biology was through teacher collaboration. We have a highly collaborative staff at both of our high schools, and in fact, in all of our K-12 schools, our teachers work very collaboratively to be able to learn from each other, to be able to offer each other expertise, and that teacher collaboration is one reason in which we've been able to have these sorts of results where 65% of the students in the class of 2015 at Irondale are earning college credit. What I would really like to be able to have shared with you today is the experience of one of our students, and obviously that's Marco. Marco's story is unique, but it's becoming less unique for students at Irondale. We feel like we have changed the culture of college readiness because it is a norm now that prior to graduation, you challenge yourself in ways that students previously had not been challenging themselves. We have deans that are working hard to keep students in courses because we know persistence is a really big habit we want for all of our students to graduate with. And so Marco's story is becoming less common, and that's the point. that students in the academic middle, students in the 30th to 70th percentile, are not just graduating prepared for college, they're graduating ready to complete college. And it's a significant difference, and we feel like it's going to make a significant difference in all of their lives. So let me turn it over to Marco to tell his story and talk a little bit about all of the great things he's been able to do in the 4 years he's been at Irondale High School.
Welcome, Mr. Ochoa. Please say your name for the record and begin, and it's just great to have you here.
Thank you very much. My name is Marco Ochoa. Good morning, everybody, and thank you for taking time to listen to us. As we've been saying here, the time that we've been sitting here, this program is great, and I can testify to that. The fact that I'm where I am today is all thanks to these opportunities that have been given to me throughout high school. My freshman year, I started out no college courses, no AP classes, and when I heard about them, they were terrifying. I didn't want to take it because I thought it was going to be too difficult for me, and it's just too much. Sophomore year, I was placed into AP United States History. I thought about dropping that class after the first day, but I decided to give it a chance and see how it went. I handled the class. I had other college classes, and they were fine. I was just worried about the AP class. I ended up passing the class with a high grade and a 4 on the AP testing, which was something amazing, considering that it's one of the hardest tests. And the following year, the first semester, I had all but one class, college level. I took AP Euro junior year, and then other college classes for the first semester. The only college class that I wasn't taking was Chinese. After second semester, eventually it turned into CIS, so I was earning college credit. And after I saw that I could handle at least 6 classes, college level, this year, I decided to go all out. Not only did I get involved with Genesis Works, I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with that, but they train you over the summer in business and IT, and during your senior year, they take 2 of your classes away so you could go intern at a Fortune 500 company. I was able to go to Medtronic, and I'm getting accounted for my last 2 hours. But right now, I'm taking AP Psychology, AP Calculus, and AP Language and Composition, along with College Physics. If I could have taken AP Physics, I would have, but I think that would have been pushing it. But this college and school has been such a great opportunity, because year after year, I saw that I was passing the classes, I saw that I could achieve more. Not only is it helping me get a head start in college, it's just a great opportunity. Both of my parents didn't go to college. My mom made it to the first year of middle school, and that was in Mexico. I was originally born in Mexico. My dad got his education through online schooling, but he never really went to an actual college or university. So I'm going to be the first person to go to college in my immediate family. And thanks to this, I already have a head start. I'm going to continue pushing myself because I've seen all the success that I've gotten. And all the organization, all that I've experienced has helped me become where I am. As stated previously, I got a full ride scholarship to Bethel University, and that's through the Act 6. And I believe what helped me there was being involved with Genesis Works and my leadership being developed over the years. Because through the college classes, we've been developing, we've been doing seminars, which develop leadership. The rigorous class and the homework assigned makes you manage your time wisely and push yourself to the limits. So I'm where I am today, thanks to this great organization. You guys have seen the statistics, the graphs. There's nothing to hide there. It's beneficial in every single way.
Thank you very much. I think you should go on the road, Mr. Ochoa, and sell this in all of our school districts, because you are absolutely an outstanding example of what can happen when students take the risk and then find out how successful they can be, because the expectation really challenges you, and you find out, I can do this. And that's, so we're very proud of you, and thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Dr. Hoverman, did you want to say something?
Yes, I did. You know, what Marco probably didn't is it would be on day one that he wanted out of US AP U.S. History. I think the story is he asked for about 2 weeks to get out of that class. And his dean wouldn't let him out. And I think Marco's example is a great, exemplifies what we're talking about. You know, there's one slide we missed, Rob, was the one on, I just wanted to highlight the savings. There.
Sorry.
Right there.
Thank you. We went
through and calculated, mm-hmm. when you look at the amount of credit that that the kids are earning, what the savings are going to amount to. Marco didn't mention to you, he's probably going to graduate with 40 college credits. So when he goes to Bethel, he'll walk in there as a second semester sophomore, which gives him a tremendous advantage. So, again, Marco's story is great, and there are other stories like it. Obviously, I'm in very strong support of the bill. I don't think that there's anything that has transformed the experience for our kids within Moundsview like dual and concurrent enrollment has. It's clearly changing lives. So I hope that as you review the bill in the amendment, I hope that you'll use our district and some of the experiences that you've heard from us as examples of what can happen on a broader based scale around not only the metro, but around the state. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Hoverman. Representative Bernardi, Representative Dabney has a question, please.
Madam Chair, two sets of questions. First to the gentleman on this end, Rob. Sorry, I lost your last name.
Yes, Mr. Reitz.
Mr. Reitz, thank you. You touched on, but I'm interested in hearing more on the value of a collaborative work environment for the teachers, not for the teachers, but the value it provides for the students, because that seemed to be where you were going. And I'm just wondering, Mr. Reitz, if you can go speak more to the value of collaborative work environments for the students.
Sure. Mr. Reitz.
The ultimate goal of our teacher collaboration is to know their impact. And because our teachers engage really in what is action research around their ability to cause learning, students benefit. The bottom line is when teachers collaborate and realize that students didn't meet their learning goals to the extent that they wished, they are providing relearning opportunities. And the relearning opportunities at Moundsview and Irondale High School are infinite. We believe that time is the variable and learning is what's fixed. And so teams are not going to stop doing things differently, trying different ways in which to cause student learning when they see that the data isn't where it needs to be. And so it has had a huge benefit on the number of students that are passing courses where our data wasn't as strong. Courses like Algebra 9. I mean, at Irondale High School, that the student performance in that course has exploded as a result of really two things: the collaborative nature of the teachers, the sharing of their ideas, and also the support that students are getting in some of our foundational and seminar courses that were designed to help students become prepared for the college concurrent courses that they'll take in 10th, 11th, and 12th grade.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, sir. And then for Dr. Hoverman, obviously the funding for concurrent enrollment in the state has lagged. We got some, mm-hmm. And that was a significant accomplishment a few years ago, but the proration of it has meant that you're actually getting a declining amount each year for every course that you offer. What are the other impediments that you experience in providing these rigorous opportunities for students beyond the funding piece?
Dr. Hoverman.
One that's been, I think, fairly well defined is the issue around credentialing of teachers to teach dual or concurrent enrollment courses. Right now, the goal we strive for is to have teachers who have a master's level in content, we've been fortunate in working with Anoka Ramsey that they've been flexible in terms of working with us on how to achieve that. But I think the amendment that Representative Bernardi has introduced would provide additional professional development resources to help us work with our teachers to get the teachers that we identify to that level of training, which would allow us to have more teachers eligible to teach that. So that's been a bit of a concern. Beyond that, you know what, our board has been, with the lagging funding, our school board has been so committed to this that they've just allocated the resources. You know, it would be great if we could reach a point where the funding was back at the level that it originally was set at. But we are going to continue to move forward anyway. And so I don't know that that's an impediment. In some ways, it takes resources that could be used in other places in our district. But otherwise, they're fully committed to doing it and have been since its inception.
Thank you, Dr. Overman. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Reitz, are there online courses available to your staff to take to enhance their skill and knowledge level for these courses? Do you handle that, or maybe Dr. Hoverman can address it? But
there are relationships with Anoka Ramsey Community College instructors that is more like a mentorship that helps our teachers, certainly. And then there are a number of AP learning opportunities for teachers, but not an online component, no.
Thank you.
Are you speaking to it in relationship to credentialing?
Yes.
There are some of those available. I've been engaged in discussions with Anoka Ramsey, some other metro area, two-year and four-year schools, to say, could that be enhanced? If that could be done, it would be very helpful. But right now, it's a little bit checkered.
Representative Yaruso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just wanted to point out, Superintendent Hooverman brought up a point that wasn't addressed when we were discussing Representative Erdahl's bill for master's degrees in content area, that is could also potentially be helpful for schools that want to do college in the schools.
Thank you. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, I just want a point of clarification. What you're looking for money to be appropriated to could be used for AP or college in the schools.
Dr. Hoverman?
Yes.
Okay, and then the other issue that we've been, Madam Chair, the other issue that we've been talking about is credit transferability and making sure that credits, whether they take an AP course, I understand, you know, that's a high-stakes test. And, you know, sometimes they don't take a 3, but they'll take typically a 4 or 5. Are you seeing the better credit transferability with the college and the schools program, like students who take the same courses at, you know, Anoka Ramsey or Normandale or some of these other places? Have you seen good transferability of those credits yet?
Dr. Hoverman.
Yes, we have seen good transferability, and there really are 3 components. There's dual concurrent enrollment, CIS, the college and the schools, and AP. I think the greater variability is probably with AP, some requiring a 4 or 5, some taking a 3. But what we do is we make sure our deans work very closely with the families of our students to make sure we know which schools they're looking at so that we find that out very early on and touch base with those schools to get an idea of what they'll accept or what their requirements will be. But transferability has been very high.
Representative Moran.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank Representative Bernardi for bringing this bill to this committee. I know this is something that you really have a lot of passion about and care a lot about, and it is really, in my mind, a great opportunity to prepare high school students, and really it's beyond preparing them to enter college, but it is just a really great opportunity when we look at currently where we are with college tuition being really, really unaffordable and many students coming out in debt, I mean in really high debt. I've had a couple of students come before me saying that they would graduate with $140,000 in debt, which is like mind-blowing to even hear that. So, you know, for you to go in, for our young student to just take advantage of this opportunity and just excel with it, and to go into college as a sophomore, is just really, it's just awesome. And just wanting to say, you know, congratulations to you for your hard work and your hard effort and for preparing yourself for the workforce in the 21st century.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Superintendent Hooverman. You indicated that in your college in the classroom courses, their teachers had master's degrees in their content areas. One of the questions that's come up in my work in promoting this is the definition of a content area. How do you determine that?
Dr. Hoverman.
It's been determined in a fairly broad way. So a master's in mathematics, any area within mathematics, in science. So it's been a broader definition. And I think one of the things that we've been striving for and that we've worked with Anoka Ramsey on is the fact that does it have to be a complete master's in terms of 12 credits, 15 credits, 18 credits, or would there be the ability to look at experiences, professional experiences, for example, AP training, other types of professional experiences, would that equate or would they consider that as being viable in making that determination? And they have been flexible in doing that, which has been very, very helpful to us.
Representative Bertel.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Hoverman. Since you mentioned mathematics, a question comes up. Would you consider a master's in mathematics education differently from a master's in mathematics?
Yes, they're interpreted with regard to dual and concurrent. They're viewed in a different way. Many of our teachers have master's degrees, you know, basically in curriculum and instruction, so it's focused on pedagogy. They're strong in content area, but we're also selective in terms of which teachers we identify and which teachers are interested and we will assign to teach these courses. It's based on a selection process.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Yarusso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Considering how few years you've been into this, this might be a question for the future, but do you have any feedback yet on whether the participation of the students in the early college program is helping to reduce the need for remediation when students go on?
Dr. Hoverman?
When they go on, will they require it in when they get to a two-year or four-year school?
Correct.
My view on it, based on what we're seeing, is that we basically have eliminated the need. Because what we're doing, in many ways, with kids who we are focused on and identify in 9th and 10th grade, Marco had mentioned foundational courses or seminar courses. In essence, what we did with those is we worked very closely with Anoka Ramsey, and we took what they were doing in their developmental reading and math courses, and we've moved that into our into what we're doing for our 9th and 10th graders to prepare them to be able to take college-level courses as juniors and seniors. So I full well believe that we've eliminated it for our kids.
Representative Yarusso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I knew that you were working on that, so thank you.
Thank you for asking the question. And MDE, Mr. Uni, I just wanted to ask you if you could provide our committee with the data on the number of students enrolled in advanced placement courses in our state and those earning, you know, a 3 or 4 or 5 or whatever is required for them to earn credit and college in the schools and the CLEP. I think we've had access to post-secondary, but any information you can provide us as we move through the future, because Representative Dabney will have a bill before us, I believe it's next week, that we'll be hearing.
Oh, you threw me by saying you were hearing one of my bills, Madam Chair.
Well, I believe I think it's going to be in the future, yes.
All right.
We would like some of that data. You know, that bill that I didn't sign on to because of the cost.
Ah, okay.
Yes.
Very good.
Love the policy, as you know.
Yes. Okay, very good.
But I did.
But we're going to hear it.
As opposed to the bill you didn't sign. We'll discuss that some other time.
As opposed to the bill for which I've given you the chief author now.
So that's true.
That's coming up, too.
Yes,
we're going to hear Dabney bills. Yes. So you clean up your mess.
I won't. Is that literal or metaphor?
Metaphoric. Representative Bernardi, well, maybe I should ask, is there anyone in the audience? Yes, we have some officials from various organizations who want to put in a good word, I can tell. And the rest of the testifiers, Mr. Reitz, Mr. Ochoa, and Dr. Hoverman, you could probably leave the table now if you like. We're going to keep Representative Bernardi here.
Madam Chair and members, I'm Roger Arnson. I represent the Elementary and Secondary Principal Association, and I know you've had a lot of questions here already on this, and you've kind of processed through this bill. I really want to stress, though, with the committee, and you get kind of a sense that maybe this is a Mounds View bill. This is a statewide bill, and the school principal organization, the secondary organization, strongly supports this. This is a major part of our legislative initiative this year. Think of this in a bit as an equity piece. The dual credits are now a very important thing to families and to kids. And we have very positive educational aspects of this, as you've heard here this morning. But a lot of school districts can't offer dual credit in the PSEO format because they don't have a community college next to them. They don't have a state college next to them. And this is, we think, actually a much better alternative to that. These are very complicated arrangements that have to be made with the higher ed institutions. The district actually has to negotiate, and as Superintendent Hooverman told you, they have a really good relationship with Anoka Ramsey. That doesn't always happen. It takes a little help from time to time in some places, and we think you, Madam Chair, and this committee, along with Representative Norris and higher ed, and I know this is going to finance as well, that matters. Part of it is having some stream here to help the teachers get the training so that they can actually support the program in their schools. The amendment here does that. That's a really good step in moving and adding that here. We really like to see that. And then finally, you know, as you make these programs available in more schools, this will grow. And as I said the other night, currently we spend $29 million a year on PSEO. The marvelous program that you heard described here, and I know this isn't the Finance Committee, but we spend only $2 million a year on this. And we need to change that. We need to make this available. It's not fair that it's not available in a lot of school districts. And as I said the other night, and I really do want to stress this, our school principals want to keep these kids in our schools, being our leaders. You saw them here. And this is really a great deal. And I know it's going off to finance, but we hope all of you continue to track this to see that this has that kind of success. Representative Erdahl's question was a very good one here. And we have some squawking from time to time with MinSKU as to what are we going to count, you know, for that major area. And that's something that you ought to track very closely as well. So thank you, Madam Chair. And I know you're real busy today, but this is really important to us.
Thank you. Ms. Dosland.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Valerie Dosland. I represent the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. And I just want to express MASA's very strong support. This funding and support for concurrent enrollment is a priority of the organization this year. And I don't want to duplicate what others have said, so I will leave my testimony at that. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the audience with concerns who would like to come forward at this time? Thank you very much. Representative Bernardi, closing comments. Oh, Representative Urso, do you have a question?
No, I'd just like to point out if we can pass this along, it'll make a nice birthday present for Representative Bernardi.
Oh, thank you, Representative Bernardi. Happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Well,
very good wishes to you.
Thank you very much. And thank you for hearing this bill, Madam Chair. I knew it was probably something that would hit your heart as well as our committee members. And I would love to collaborate with you on this, so please sign onto the bill. And it sounds like there's some other bills I'd be interested in signing on as well. And I also have, just to let you know, one about transferability of PSEO and college and the school credits into our MinSKU and our university system. So I need some help on that as well, because it's not always smooth, as Representative Peterson alluded to. So anyway, I see people around this room that care about rigor. They care about graduation rates in college, closing the achievement gap, equity, and transferability. And this is something, I grew up in the community in which I represent, and I'm so proud that they value education so much. And my parents were teenage parents when they got married, and they're still married after, I don't know, it's getting close to 60 years now. And I know what education has meant in their lives and what they instilled in me. And I can only imagine how proud Marco's parents are of him. And if we can really make a difference in the lives of not only our students, their current families, their families that they're going to be raising in the future, and our whole state in making us successful, I think this is a key bill that can bring us all together. So thank you.
Thank you, and thank you very much, Mr. Ochoa, too, for taking time to come and tell us your story and your successes to inspire others. With that, the chair renews Representative Seltzer's motion that House File 724, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Education Finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. The motion prevails, and the bill is on its way to Education Finance. Representative Kreisha. Welcome back to the testifying table, Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I will move House File 947 to be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Education Finance. Please introduce yourself again, Representative Kreisha.
Thank you. And thank you, Madam Chair. And
explain your bill.
Representative Kreisha, and just a quick note, when Mr. Ochoa is running the world, he should kindly remember us elders. The bill I have in front of you is House File 947, and as you see, we have some testifiers. This is relating to after-school programs and establishing a competitive grant program. The reason that this is important to me is, in my philosophy, is I've been working with children, and I'm trying to find in all the aspects of our child's lives that we can touch them. One of them, as I watch, is the Boys and Girls Clubs and many of the after-school programs that exist today. And when I grew up, after school, we would find a lot. We may play baseball, play football, whatever. We'd find something to do to stay out of trouble. Sometimes that didn't always work. But what has changed now is when you go after school, if you're behind academically as I was, or you need that other opportunity, the after school program's value has so much more value now. When I look at the Boys and Girls Club in our town, when those children go there and they participate, they're also paired up with mentors. They're paired up with youth that are able to help them with their homework, to keep them on track, things that, because our world has changed so much, that I didn't have to worry about. And I just see that we need to do so much more for these children and these youth. So the bill that I have in front of you has no appropriation in front of you at this point. We're going to have that argument as I try to establish those dollar amounts in the next committee. But I wanted to put this in front of you for policy and innovation consideration. To talk about the great need that we have for after-school programs and how we can make this better. And with that, I'll turn it over to some of my testifiers, one of which I'm glad to see is alongside of me and not behind me.
Welcome to our committee, Deputy Brulee, and please say your name for the record and begin.
Madam Chair, committee members, thank you for having me today. My name is Deputy Chief Mark Brulee. I'm with the Brooklyn Park Police Department, and I appreciate the opportunity to sit down with you and just talk a little bit about after-school programs and what we feel is a relationship to crime and building relationships with our youth and our community. The national research across the nation is no different than here in Minnesota or my community in Brooklyn Park, and that is between the hours of 3 and 6 is the peak time for crime, and specifically for juvenile crime, to occur. Specifically in my community, between the hours of 2 and 8, 44.3% of my juvenile crime occurs between that time. And then between the hours of 2 and 9, 50%, half of my juvenile crime occurs in that very small window. To us, that is a clue in police work that there's an opportunity here to be able to do some sort of intervention. This topic in juvenile crime is weighs on our minds heavily in law enforcement. Specifically, we've done a lot of things, and one of the things we've done is create a identity called the Brooklyn Bridge Alliance for Youth. That group brings community members and specifically brings together decision makers and leaders in the community to talk about these subjects. And one of the things that group continuously arrives at is the gap that we see in after-school program where these kids don't have things to do. The practical application, the police side of me is as a patrolman and as my patrolman every night, we drive by these kids in groups that have nothing to do. They lack the opportunities that we heard about, and most importantly, they lack that opportunity for the mentorship. We have great police officers and great intervention techniques that we can work with these kids, but we need the opportunity to be able to get them somewhere and do that. Too many times we watch these kids on the side of the road or at a park in a group, and then we leave only to hear a robbery call or a burglary call, and then we see those kids running from the scene, and we had just seen them 25 minutes earlier milling around. I hate to say it, but the old adage we've heard that idle hands are the work of the devil. It's kind of true. If these kids are left unattended and don't have good healthy activities, these are kind of the outcomes that come from that. The last thing I would just like to share before I use up all the time that we have is the real missed opportunity here for mentorship and programming. And I think that has such a value. We've had such great success reaching out to these kids and connecting them, which puts them on a path to be so much successful and be like the Marco, who I would also like to offer a job to, who's just an outstanding young man. And that's, it starts with some of these kids with just a mentorship program or being able to get them on the right track. So, again, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Chief Brulee. Ms. Kunian?
Yes.
Please say your name for the record and begin.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Carrie Dennison-Kunian, and I'm the Executive Director of Ignite After School, and I want to thank you so much for this opportunity to talk with you today about after school and to be in support of the After School Community Learning Grants in Minnesota. A little bit briefly about Ignite After School, we are the state's after school network. We're part of a national network of after school networks, which is a little bit of alphabet soup to say that. But we do a couple of things. One, as a network, we bring together the various stakeholders involved in after school. So that includes community-based organizations. It includes community ed and schools. It includes libraries and park and recreation and all the places that young people are engaged in after school, as well as funders and other key stakeholders. And we do a couple of key things. We, as Ignite After School, do not provide after school opportunities, but instead we work to ensure high quality in after school across the state, and we also work in policy as well. So we are in support of this competitive grant process that would be administered through the Minnesota Department of Education, and I wanted to share a little bit about what the bill covers. We would like to serve primarily low-income youth and targeted to address youth most at risk of experiencing an opportunity gap and who are impacted by the achievement gap. And we also would like to ensure guaranteed distribution statewide to address gaps that exist in urban communities, suburban, as well as in greater Minnesota. We also would like to target programs that build young people's capacity to become productive adults, to develop the skills and behaviors necessary to succeed in post-secondary and career options, and also that encourage school attendance and improve school performance. Lastly, the bill also ensures that we can strengthen the quality of after-school programs by providing professional development and technical assistance so that programs can deliver on the positive outcomes associated with high-quality after-school. And I also wanted to share a little bit about the research because, you know, we talk a lot about, I think sometimes there's a sense that after-school programs are nice, but they're not necessary. So I wanted to talk a little bit about what the research is showing currently. So you have a handout that illustrates some of this, and I don't want to go through it in depth, but just to point out what you're seeing in front of you, there's some great research by Deborah Vendel out of UC Irvine in California that shows that sustained participation in after-school programs over the elementary grades can close the math achievement gap by grade 5, which is pretty powerful. There's also really great research to show that regular participation can improve behavior, it can increase school attendance, and it can also impact core academics as well. So we know that participation in high quality after-school programs works, but in Minnesota we don't really make the investments necessary to make sure that it works for us here. So your handout also shows that state investments have decreased over the last 6 years and that there's a huge participation gap for young people in our state, particularly between low-income youth and high-income youth. So you can see some charts there from the Minnesota Student Survey. So in addition to the benefit of after-school programs and the benefits they have on young people's learning and skill building, I also wanted to talk a little bit about the benefit they have on working families. So the After-School Alliance conducted a study, America After 3, that included a survey of families in Minnesota and parents in Minnesota, and it found that over 70% of Minnesota parents agree that after-school programs help working parents keep their job. and 82% of Minnesota parents support public funding for after-school programs. So there's just a lot of support for this kind of investment. So given the research-based outcomes of these programs, we really are excited to talk with you more and hear your thoughts on the value of after-school, and also really encourage you to consider this proposal and moving it forward. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kunin. And you brought someone who's part of your program,
yes.
I bet. Ms. Yang?
Switch spots so you can... Yes, this is Tom. She'll introduce herself.
Please introduce yourself and begin.
All right. Madam Chair, member of the committee, my name is Tong Yang, and I'm a senior in Highland Park Senior High School. I've been a youth leader for the past 3 years in Water Foundation Building, youth leadership at the school program called Wildlife, Youth Leadership Initiative. As a youth leader, I get to design a lesson plan for a group of youth, 50 youth, ages 14 through 18, so that they get to reflect on who they are, do team building with others, and also plan service projects like planting trees along the Mississippi River. The most thing I enjoy about this program is I get to meet a lot of new people and also reflect a lot. I'd like to tell you about my participant year in Wildlife had made me a different person from who I was 3 years ago. During my freshman year, I didn't focus on anything much but myself in school. I didn't also have a strong relationship with my parents, and we didn't talk as much. Although I loved going to school, I also didn't have a really good relationship with any of my teachers. Before Wildlife, I used to just, you know, hang out with friends and go to school and do nothing else than that. But after I joined Wildlife my sophomore year, I began to see the world differently. I realized that everybody has their own struggles, their own story to be told. The world wasn't what I thought it was. Wildlife had led me on a positive path, made me question what kind of friends and what I wanted to do in life. Even though I don't yet know what I want to do in life, I have learned that in Wildlife, there's always going to be something positive at the end of the day if I really try. Because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if you fail or succeed. It's about trying and believing in yourself. What I have learned from Wildlife mainly is that my voice mattered. I have learned to use my voice. This has helped me grow my confidence and made me appreciate what I have in life. And Wildlife, I learned to communicate with adults such as staff. Thanks to Wildlife, I have the confidence to approach teachers, speak up, and know that they will listen to me. They will listen and help me. By doing this, I was able to develop better relationship with my teachers and my parents. What I had learned in Wildlife, I carry with me at home and to school. Because what's the point of showing up to this program if I don't take that learning outside of Wildlife? Today, I am changed for the better because of Wildlife. I have always been able to stand in front of classes, but Wildlife I was able to believe that what I was saying is important because my voice mattered. I have learned that whatever I say, I will just say it. I'm here today because even when I did not believe in myself, other people did, my supporters. I'm here today. If it wasn't for Wildlife, I don't think I would have this really great opportunity to be standing here today in front of you and experiencing this myself. Not every youth in Minnesota have an opportunity like Wildlife. I urge you to dedicate more funding to after-school programs so that more young people can get the support and experience that I have. After-school programs help young people build the skills we are going to need to do well in this world, such as the ability to speak up, solve problems, teach others, and build positive relationships, as well as the ability to believe in ourselves and be confident, because these things matter. I am proof of that. I make sure every Minnesota youth person has these experiences because it's worth it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Yang, very much. Mr. Ickler? Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Chair Erickson, committee members. My name is Al Ickler, and I'm the Director of Community Education for Robbinsdale Area Schools, also a member of the Brooklyn Bridge Alliance that was talked about briefly before. And I'm representing the Minnesota Community Education Association today, and we fully support this bill and think it's an important thing for our communities. Community education delivers after-school programs through our schools daily, so we know the value, the benefit that they have with students. and the impact that they have in supporting families that they've talked about previously. We see that on a day-to-day basis and recognize that value. We know oftentimes that our students that come from families with low income have the hardest time accessing programs because of cost or transportation or other barriers. And we know that there are insufficient resources at this point in our communities to meet that important need. And so we fully support this bill, and we really appreciate your consideration of it today. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ickler. Representative Kreisha, I think there are some in the audience, too, who might want to provide a good word. Audience members, do we have someone who wants to come forward and testify? Well, those who came here to support after-school programs, please stand. Very good. And does any one of you want to say a word in the microphone at the testifying table? Yes, please come forward. I like brave students. Yes. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Tara Veng, and I'm a senior at Central High School. And I wouldn't be giving statistics because you guys can find that out online. But what you guys can't find is our individual story. And so I want to share that in addition with Tong's story. And we are both in Youth Leadership Initiative. And I don't have a formal script, but my script lies within my soul. And so I really care about this and really want to share out loud. And I am a low-income student, first generation as well. And as a student of color, I really struggle with my education. Finding my own voice was always the hardest. I was always labeled as the quiet girl. And as the self-fulfilling prophecy, I became the quiet girl. But I feel like I've really begun to live once I joined after-school program like Youth Leadership Initiative that really helped cultivate my voice. And so with this program, I stepped out of my comfort zone because people pushed me. And I began to push myself too because I feel like I am made for something greater and it is possible. And so by having such a program and amazing people surround me and believe in me, I began to believe in myself and I start challenging my own voice. And I began to find who I am as a person. And when I found my own voice, I took that voice outside of the program and used it at home and using it at school. And one of the greatest things I learned at Youth Leadership Initiative was vulnerability. At first, vulnerability is one of my greatest weakness just because I do not like to show how like emotionally I am. But after being in Wala, I can go home and have meaningful conversation with my dad about such topics that are sensitive. And I feel like by having the opportunity at Wala, my relationship with my father has been much greater. And even at school, I feel like I am not inferior to those other students who always speak up and are the dominant voice in class. I feel like my own opinion is as important as theirs. And so I just really appreciate after-school funding, and I strongly believe that education, formal education helps you further with college and stuff, but after-school program like Youth Leadership Initiative helps you with your social and emotional intelligence, and that will really take me in the long run. So thank you. That is the end of my testimony.
Well, thank you very much. You certainly have built your confidence, and that is wonderful to hear. What a confident young woman.
And Madam Chair, she'll
Yang
be with
well.
Me testifying on all my bills from now on.
I agree, Representative Kreisha. Representative Moran, you have a question. Hopefully there's someone at the table.
Well, maybe not so much a question, but more of a statement.
Sure.
But I do would like to thank Representative Kreisha for bringing this bill forward. You know, this has been a day of just bringing really good bills to the table. And, you know, when I look at our title, Education Innovation Policy Committee, that's what it really is about, is how we can be innovative and looking at how we can do things that's outside of the educational school system that really impacts us inside of the school system. And this is one of those things, you know, that does that. After school programming is really important, and as the officer talked about, three peak hours for kids to find things to do with their time, and then idle, they usually find something to do that sometimes we don't want to see happen. But being in a structural place, in a safe place, in a nurturing place that empowers them to help build them only impacts them themselves, but impacts them in their homes and in the classroom. And that really is a part of creating better outcomes for our kids within our educational system. So, I mean, I think you guys said it all. I love hearing stories. So to our young people who came forth and found their voices and testified, thank you for being here. You encourage me, and that's a great thing. But again, Representative Crenshaw, you are taking on some really good stuff, and just want to thank you for this one, too.
Thank you, Representative Moran. Representative Yaruso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got a question that involves the graphic handout that we had.
Quinine, you might be needed now.
Yes. Thank you. The one that is titled After School Narrows the Achievement Gap, the horizontal axis there has low participation average and high participation. Is that characteristic of individual participants, or was that some sort of school-wide average? Or
Ms. Quinine.
Madam Chair and Representative Yaruso, thank you for that question. This was a study of multiple after-school programs, so it's looking at participation of students in the after-school programs, and what it's looking at is young people participated 30 sessions or more in programming. So it's showing that it's not only participating in high-quality after-school programs, but it's that young people have to go often enough to receive the benefits that you're seeing in the chart.
Representative Yaruso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that question is really, it's relevant because it helps us understand, it shows the students with high participation, there's less of an achievement gap. But if we look on the other side, there's a participation gap. And so because programs are you know, it's important that they're available, and I'm not opposing the bill because it's very important that they're available. But the participation is self-selected, and it's among the students whose families are motivated to sign up for it and can make those arrangements and don't need to be home to babysit a younger sibling or something like that. So, my concern is just that we make sure we don't overstate the results shown on that graph. It's a really important result. We have to keep in mind that we still have to find ways to reach the people that you can't reach through your program. And this bill is important because having the funding allows you to put it in more schools, and it depends less on fee-based programs, which I imagine contributes quite a bit to the big gap we see in participation between lower-income and higher-income students.
Ms. Quinine, did you want to comment on that?
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative. We could provide, there is a federal after-school program, and we do have some data that I'm sure the department can, we can work with the department to provide to show in that programming how many young people who are funded participate at, 30 sessions or more. But we would also find in after-school that high quality also correlates or connects with participation. So when we as the after-school network work statewide with our partners to ensure high quality, we often find that young people are excited to be there, they're connected, and therefore they come and participate. And we also, in this grant, are looking for programs to apply and to be funded that follow research and best practice. And research and best practice would show that you offer enough sessions to be able to achieve the outcomes. So we're also, we're looking to fund programs that have put together a plan to address some of those pieces.
Could either of the young people comment on how the word gets out about this? You have friends. Do friends tell friends, or do you have some kind of session whereby you invite? Could either of you comment on that?
Madam Chair and the representative, I was able to hear about this program through friends, and also because they themselves came to promote themselves at my school, which I was luckily to bump into and hear more information about it.
Thank you.
Yes.
Would you like to add anything to that?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. We also have, so the staff at Youth Leadership Initiative also come to our school themselves, and they set up a table to promote more about the program and really draw in people. And the previous leaders who are youth mentors and emerging leaders in the program also go on the school news and put up posters around the school to get everyone's attention. Thank you.
Very good. Are there any other questions? Is there anyone in the audience? Oh, Representative Ward. Yes. You have a question. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to just thank you for doing this and support all aspects of what you've been presenting and what you're working on. One question I have is about accessibility, making them available, really accessible, though they're in the schools, are the kids. Representative Uroso mentioned kids having to go home to babysit. I want to give you an example. In one of the communities I represent, school is really quite a distance, and it's a busing distance to get to the school. Kids have to be home. There's not an after-school bus or whatever, you know, or an activities bus. So the kids are home. There's a park nearby and a basketball court. A neighbor complained because kids were congregating playing basketball. And they were playing basketball. Yeah, you know exactly what happened. They took the basketball court down, the goal down. Mm. Now the kids have nothing. They were happily engaged playing that after-school game. And we really need to make a lot of opportunities available in places where the kids can be. So I want to thank you for all of your work and just help. I want us to remember that we have to make it available and accessible. Keep the kids out of trouble and happily engaged.
And perhaps what's needed there, Representative Ward, is an adult supervisor who would allay the fears that these children are not going to do something other than enjoy basketball.
Yes, and I did, Madam Chair, if I may also, I did just send a message to the school district and the city and Parks and Rec about this bill to say, remember, they're all
members. Representative Seltzer.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And my question follows up in the theme that Representative Ward had. And I am just wondering, when I was on the school board, you know, we had after-school programs, and we're always looking for ways. We had activity buses to provide transportation. But I know that transportation can be a barrier sometimes to participation. And so I'm just wondering, in this grant, are there, you know, do you envision part of it being used for transportation if necessary, or would that be something separate? And I just also just wanted to echo the obstacle that can be.
Representative Kreisha.
And thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the question. At this point, I do not believe there is allocations for the transportation. That may come down the road. I certainly understand where you're going with that. Oh, there is. They can't provide. Oh, you know what? Okay, so I'm going to scratch that. I'm going to go to somebody who knows.
Ms. Gooden.
Madam Chair and Representative Seltzer. So in other types of programs like this that we've had in the past, we used to have after-school funding in Minnesota that we no longer have. And it would be the department to design within, but the history of that work is that transportation has been an allowable expense.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Seltzer. Representative Kreisha, do you have anything else that... Why don't you give closing comments then?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
At that stage.
So just very quickly, I think as I try to put all these practices and bills in place that I'm working on, one of them is there's no surprise that I'm looking at the at-risk population. And I believe there's lots of ways we identify those, whether it may be through the empirical eyes of an officer driving by a group of kids, or through free and reduced, or through child welfare, or just kids that need a little extra something. There's lots of ways to try to get to these kids. But I guess what I want to say most importantly is I'm trying to change the mentality that these are our kids, or these are groups that we deal with. They're not groups that we deal with. They're kids that we offer opportunities to. They're students that we reach out to. They're young adults that are going to be taking on leadership roles that we need to find participation means for them to be successful. When we take the mentality that they're groups to be dealt with, then we take a very punitive, cold, hard approach to them. Whereas if we come back around with a warm and caring approach and say, hey, this is how we reach out to you, this is how we get to you, this is how we make you successful, I think we can move on the path to much better success.
Thank you, Representative Kreisha. And I want to thank all of you for coming. Mr. Heller, is this something that you needed to address? Then why don't you come down and yes. Thank you very much for coming, all of you. We have one more testifier before I move the bill to the next committee. Mr. Heller, please introduce yourself and address this after-school program that we are moving to finance.
Thank you, Chair Erickson and Education Committee, for following me testing file on 947 bill. Unofficially, I represent the twice exceptional and print disabled. I have a handout. I've been working up here at the Capitol. However, I haven't got a fully accessible PDF yet. I do have an electronic email from the department. I see that he's here as well. Perhaps he can help expand on this grant money thing as third parties continue to use state money regarding content accessibility. I was wondering if I could provide you those copies.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. And Mr. Heller, if you would visit with Representative Yarusso after this meeting. She has the name, Mr. Heller. Representative Yarusso has the name of a company that I think could address one of your gravest needs, and it's new technology using 3D printers, and we think we have a good idea to get you thinking about. Did you have more testimony?
Yes, I'd like to expand just on this briefly, if I may. Again, Rick Heller speaking on House File 947. Adobe Reader has been around for many years. Most PDFs are made with a 7 or greater. Adobe Reader will read out loud. So I don't know if that's new technology, but it's probably new information since Minnesota PET statute 16E in 2009 with really no meaningful discussion. Now, getting back to this bill, if you review these, you'd like to review that if you like. I believe it's from Department. And the other one on the other side is from research. And it talks about how, well, basically, it's my understanding this document is describing how many non-state agencies are using state money but aren't required to apply the accessibility law.
So, and Mr. Heller, how does this apply to after-school programs?
It's my understanding, if I understand this state document correctly about after-school programs, districts are exempt from Statute 16E laws. However, the people that are print-disabled and blind, they are required to meet those needs of those individuals. I'd be glad to share anybody who is interested, but if you go to the Minnesota Department of Education website, I'd be glad to provide you that information to show you how blind and print disabled are connected to 508 of the 1973 Rehabilitation Act and 2.0 Web Content Accessibility Guidelines, AA. If we continue to hand monies out to grants, and if departments, as you see, the one from the department on the other side talks about, they strongly encourage that, however, Jay Wyant at Minute, Office of Enterprise Technology, has no governance, nor does the department. Yet here we are discussing about engagement, which is the effect network of Y, of Universal Design for Learning. It's my understanding if we're going to be effective to motivate people to be engaged in reading and developing of reading, under definition F of No Child Left Behind, you'll find that there, I suggest that you consider soon, if not this session, how Statute 16 should apply to third-party vendors that are using state money, including school districts. And if the department would like to come up and speak on this, perhaps he could provide some insight to that.
Well, Mr. Heller, we have two more bills on the agenda, so I think we'll let MDE think about what you have just challenged them with and move on. Representative Kreisha, any other comments you. That you want to make?
No, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Heller, for your testimony, too. We know you have a grave concern about that issue, and we're trying to handle it. So with that, committee, I will renew my motion that House File 947 be re-referred to the Committee on Education Finance. All those in favor say yes, yes.
Yes.
Those opposed say no. See, just checking to see if you're listening. The motion prevails, and the bill is on its way to education finance. That's because I have a bill up next, and I'm eager to get this so Mr. Schumacher can get here and hear his bill. I don't think we need all these chairs. Madam Chair, I'd like to move 1075 to be considered for inclusion in an omnibus bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the Chair would now like to bring House File 1075 before the committee. Chair Erickson, please move your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll move it again. I move 1075 to be before the committee and to be considered for inclusion in an omnibus bill.
Thank you, Representative Erickson.
Members, this is a continuation of something I did several years ago when substitute teachers came to me, short-term substitute teachers, and asked that we consider relieving them of continuing education credits because they were short-term substitutes, and until we changed the law a few years ago, they had to continue to earn those continuing credits. You know, and if they wanted to, that was fine, but they were not then required under law to do so. So today we're doing the same with retired principals who seek to help out in our school districts when there is need because there is either an interim need or there is not a hire in place or there is a principal on leave for some reason. So with that, Madam Chair and committee, I'd like to turn to the Executive Director of the Board of School Administrators so that she can explain the need for this.
Thank you. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Madam Chair, is this on? Yes. Madam Chair, member of the committees, Representative Erickson.
Could you introduce yourself?
My name is Janet Moore. I'm the Executive Director of the Board of School Administrators.
Thank you.
Unlike the substitute teacher provisions in statute and rule, where they have a provision for a short call sub license, the Board of School Administrators' rule and statutes do not provide for short call substitutes for principals. And this bill, inclusion in statute 128A14 was, I believe, enacted in 2012. In which retired principals would be allowed to receive a license without earning 125 CEUs. The Board of School Administrators rule requires that all administrators, principals, superintendents, special education directors, and community education directors do require 125 CEUs in order to renew their license. After much discussion with the Board of School Administrators, there are concerns that with the unique and supervisory role of a principal, that there would be potentially principals that could be out of date with policies, laws, statutes that pertain even to student safety. And the board had concerns about moving forward with a short call license and would prefer to strike the language from 122A. And so all principals, whether they are retired or not, who want to serve as a principal would then be required the 125 professional development hours prior to renewal of their license.
Madam Chair, I'm Roger Arnson. I represent the Elementary and Secondary Principal Associations, and we support the Chair's bill here as well. And just a little bit of history, we actually had hoped this language might work. When we put it together a couple of years ago, Representative Mariani actually authored the bill for us at that time. If you notice, he's a co-author on this as well, and this is an important change to require these continuing education credits, and so we support it as well. So we hope that we urge all of your support on this.
Thank you. So, and Madam Chair and Committee, I apologize because I referenced my retired substitute short-term teachers with this, and I was incorrect in saying that, and I should know better.
All right, thank you. Are there any other testifiers that would like to testify for this bill or with concerns? Oops. Go ahead. Okay, thank you, Mr. Eller, and state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Chair of Education Committee, Rick Heller speaking. Thank you, members, as well, speaking on, again, the 1075 bill. Once again, for the record, unofficially represent the twice exceptional print-disabled. Okay, so it's my understanding that principals, perhaps we can answer this question, principals go to academy. Like, you know, they go training, and it's pretty intense at the U. Now, we're bringing back old principals that may not have that training. How does that apply to the element when it comes to their intervention in a classroom and how effective they can be as a assistant principal, since this is ongoing training? I guess that's what they're asking for, and I think that's I think that's important. Will they be required to go through that same training if they're going to be on call?
So, Mr. Heller, I've motioned Mr. Arnson to come because he represents the Principals Association, and you know, I think the issue that you have concern with is very specialized, but maybe he could address what could be done for those who return, who are retired, who may not be up to date on those who are exceptional learners, such as Mr. Heller.
Mr. Arnson?
Madam Chair and members, I think that's specifically the intent of Representative Erickson's bill, is to see that everybody is up to date, and that we aren't going to take any chances with people that aren't up to date. It's a five-year cycle where they have to have the credits done, and it's a general agreement that we think everyone needs to have these. I mean, so I think that addresses the problem well.
Thank you, Mr. Arnson. Mr. Heller?
Yes, Chair. To the gentleman I just spoke, the thing is if we're going to call back principals and they want to be re-involved in the process, I think they need to take the initiative to be trained and be ready, not that we have 5 years for them to get them trained. And that's, I'm asking that somebody here in the committee would suggest perhaps adding that in until making it, other than making it loosey-goosey.
Okay.
And that's my suggestion. Obviously, I'm just a participant here to engage the our talented leaders and gifted leaders. I appreciate your time as well on this.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. We'll follow up on that. And with that, Madam Chair, I'd like to renew my motion that 1075 be laid over for possible inclusion in
an omnibus
bill.
We just have one question from Representative Ward. Sorry.
Okay. I want to get Mr. Representative Schumacher in here.
Okay, and actually, Representative Ward has said she's okay with it, so we'll go ahead
and
see no further discussion. This will be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So here comes Representative Schumacher. Representative Schumacher, I'll move House File 768 to be re-referred to the Committee on Education Finance. Welcome to our committee. Please say your name for the record and explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Joe Schumacher. And the bill in front of us is just allowing one of my school districts, the Hendrick School District, to do its own reciprocity agreements with the South Dakota schools that are around the area. It's a school district that's right on the border. They had this ability several years ago when they were in contract with the Ivanhoe School District, which is also a Minnesota school. They severed that contract about 3 years ago, and one of the unintended consequences of severing that contract was that this reciprocity agreement, or their ability to negotiate for reciprocity on their own, fell through. So I'm just asking for member support so that they can have that reinstated.
Thank you, Representative Schumacher. Are there any questions? Representative Yarusso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Schumacher, why do they need this exemption? What's different about this district that they need a different deal than the general one?
Representative Schumacher.
Madam Chair, Representative Yarusso, they, right now, because of the current agreement versus the agreement that they had before, the school district is paying out about an extra $84,000 a year because they were able to negotiate a little bit more on the details for their school districts. I should also note that the school district directly to the south and the school district directly to the north of the Hendricks School District also have this reciprocity agreement.
Are there any other questions? Representative Krisha.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And just very quickly, I'm on the bill. I used to work in Hendricks. That's where I got my teaching. If you know the location, the geography, this is a very important deal because they're so sparse and it's so difficult for them to pull everything together. So I absolutely support this. And thank you, Representative Schumacher, for bringing this up.
And thank you, Representative Schumacher. With that, I'm just going to move, renew my motion that 768 be referred to the Committee on Education and Finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed, no. The motion prevails, and the bill moves
Thank
to
you,
Education
members.
Finance. Thank you, Representative Schumacher. Members, this meeting is adjourned.